Could you see yourself as the CEO of Compass one day?
Has always been going for the crown jewel of all these markets. I think that there is going to be radical change. There will be major changes with NAR. There's a lack of trust, a lack of faith in leadership.
Do you think a lot of these brokers are saying we would have preferred to go through the bankruptcy?
All of the lawsuit stuff and everything else, and here we are. We are still obligated to be a member of NAR to access the MLS. Yes, there is a bit of a stigma with transaction fee brokerages, like they're lesser than, and oh my God, you know, we're gonna poo-poo that. The best agents are the ones that are always learning. I think so much in life is timing, and it definitely felt like the right company at the right time. Have we ever experienced a time where we've essentially had sort of four black swan issues come crashing down on the industry?
I have the pleasure today of sitting with Lacey Conway, who is the CEO of Latter & Blum, just announced a huge sale to Compass. We're going to get into that a little bit. 30-plus offices in Louisiana, Texas, South Mississippi. This company's been around since 1916. I don't know really if anybody else can say that. So congratulations on that. Number one in the state of Louisiana year over year. Last year, $3.6 billion in sales. I believe that's correct. 3.6.
That is, but that's really just residential.
Just residential. So there's other sales included in that. We're talking 20,000 plus units each year or more. Top 30 nationwide year over year. Lacey has her undergraduate at Boston University, MBA in University of New Orleans. She's on the board of United Way, and she has an extensive career leading real estate professionals here in the U.S. Mother. As well.
Yes, yes. And happy to be here. Thank you. This is such a treat. I know we ran into each other in the hallway and gosh, so happy to connect and put a face to the name that I've always wanted to meet.
Well, thank you for coming on. This is an honor for us to have you on the podcast. I'd like to get into the history of Latter & Blum because not too many companies can say 1916 attached to, you know, their name. It's really incredible what's been accomplished there. When you started the company, you were an agent. Your father owned the company.
Correct.
Which is, I'm sure, an interesting dynamic. But just give us a little bit of the history, and then we'll get into the sale with Compass.
Good. So yes, founded in 1916 in New Orleans, Latter & Blum was always known as a full-service brokerage, you know, commercial, residential, really the leader as far as know-how and doing real estate the right way. But yes, we are such a fixture in the markets that we serve, but especially with New Orleans, such a deep history there. Really, the company has always had a philanthropic bend as well. So even the, you know, Latter & Blum, the founders, were very generous in giving and investing in New Orleans. So we'll fast forward. My father, Bob Merrick, bought the company in the 80s. He certainly has always had more of a commercial background, industrial warehousing, working along the river. I think he felt like, I think IBM came in and bought his portfolio of warehouses. And so he said he was, you know, bored and had some money, bought the company, restructured it, and then very aggressively went out and acquired other companies. The first major acquisition was, you know, buying a company run by a guy, Heidel Brown, in Baton Rouge. So that was the first time the company really doubled in size. My dad, since he's owned it, I think has done close to 30 acquisitions, large and small. So, you know, we pretty much at this point, like you mentioned earlier, span from Houston, Texas, throughout Louisiana, and into southern Mississippi. I recently got my broker's license in Alabama. We'll see where that goes.
Oh, expansion time.
Yes. Oh my gosh. In a great market. You know, we've, you know, anyway, and even into the whole panhandle, lots of movement there. Anyway, lovely places to be. But through these acquisitions and expansions, it really has always been going for sort of the crown jewel of all these markets in Baton Rouge, Lafayette, Lake Charles, Alexandria, smaller markets as you go west, but really trying to capture the top companies in the market. We've always enjoyed top market share and really being a premium brand that attracts top tier agents.
Were you kind of like groomed to be in real estate? You went to college and so you got your undergrad, you've got your MBA.
Yes.
But was that like the plan? Was your dad like, hey, Lacey, I want you to be running the company someday?
You know, he always threw it out there. I think I said no twice. But he always has been, healthy with the hands off. I did jump in as a sales agent, was an agent for about 10 years. And I think he really wanted me to learn by doing, and not always trying to keep me under the wing.
Yeah.
So it was out doing sales, which was great. Then moved into management. And I think that was the point where he said, I really want you to get involved and know the company. So I feel like I've certainly enjoyed walking the talk and experiencing a lot of parts of the company, which I feel like has made it a lot easier to relate, you know, whether it's to the sales managers who work really hard. It's a tough job being an agent to being sort of executive leadership. So yes, he threw it out there. I think I kind of shied away, but then ultimately, as time went on, felt like it was important to know the company.
Well, 10 years as an agent, he made you certainly earn it.
Yes.
If, you know, his ambitions were for you to someday be in the position you are as CEO. 10 years as an agent is a long time to do that role. I think everybody listening, if they're in that role right now, would agree. Any relationship with you and, you know, the Howard Hanna brand, who's a family
yes.
operation, William Ravis,
yes.
who's a family operation, like Bill just celebrated 50 years and, you know, his goal and vision was always Chris and Ryan, you know,
yes,
his boys running
yes.
the company. So any, do you guys pick each other's brains?
We do. I think, I feel very lucky, you know, even, Mike Pappas, who's here, who
yeah,
I adore,
I'm
Christina,
talking to Mike,
amazing
today.
He is a force.
Yeah.
Certainly one of my favorites. Lots of family owned operations to troubleshoot with, you know, groups like the Realty Alliance, which are amazing. You have that interaction where you can say it's complicated, you know, it's running a brokerage and it's managing family dynamics. You know, it was also a part of a trendsetter group that had quite a few, parent, whether it's father, son, you know, family relationships in running a brokerage. So I think it's, I do feel very lucky that I've made friends with these companies and feel very comfortable, relating and commiserating at times.
Yeah.
I mean, it does. At times it can feel like child abuse, you know, working with your parents, but such an incredible experience. And I know even, I'm actually the youngest of my dad's four daughters. So I think there's always a little tinge of, jealousy with my sisters that I have this,
are they involved
special
in the company
relationship and dynamic with my dad. Two of them have their license, but none are involved in the day to day.
Yeah. Wow, interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, so you got to earn it. You got to be in the position to do the job. Did any of these big independent family-owned or otherwise independent companies, when you announced the Compass sale,
yes.
did any of them reach out to you like, hey, I thought you were going to stick it out with us. You've been doing it longer than us, 100
God.
Plus years. Did anybody give
yes,
you
a- is the answer. I find, and even through, you know, the acquisitions that we've done, certainly, say even we acquired a lovely family-owned operation in New Orleans, Gardner Realtors, which was another fourth generation, you know, really steeped in culture in New Orleans. You just find that there is a bit of camaraderie with the sort of independent family-owned firms that you feel like, isn't it great that you can be on the same team and work towards the same goal versus, you know, kind of trying to fight it out with each other. So there were some lovely phone calls to say, gosh, wish we could have gotten to the table. But, you know, I find in my assessment and my excitement with the Compass, Latter & Blum and Compass Now, it is an interesting combination of the old and new. When I think about possibly where our weaknesses are, I find that Compass is such a nice complement to that. I think going forward, and even with my conversations with Robert and the Compass team, there's an appreciation for the fact that we've operated for over 100 years and we kind of know what we're doing. And we, you know, this acknowledgement that real estate is very local and you want to have a local feel. So there's a lot of reassurance knowing that our team stays intact and we can essentially take the best of Latter & Blum and the best of Compass, you know, add that swagger, add that incredible marketing, this tech platform that I don't think we could ever try to replicate on our own and move forward as a team.
I think roughly on agent count basis, this could be the most significant acquisition for Compass. Roughly, agent count wise, this would be a 20% boost on Compass's agent count, right?
I think that might be correct.
Right around
yes.
there.
I mean,
that's
I know
what I've read anyway. So
Realty Austin was a great acquisition. And I have to say, I mean, part of what's been overwhelming and wonderful is the reception from our agents to the announcement. Agents at Compass, their team embracing us, the excitement of having this region, you know, added to their network. I know that so much of what Compass does is agent driven, lots of referrals between agents. I know it's like my calendar's full from curious agents coming in, wanting to meet us and get to know our team, which is fabulous.
So. Was the timing of the decision, you know, was that a unique situation where it was just, they're unrelated, the timing of what's going on in the industry, was that a component to the decision?
I think it was definitely a component. I think so much in life is timing. And it definitely felt like the right company at the right time. So definitely seizing that and saying, let's go.
You made the decision. You're the CEO.
Yes. But my father is still in the mix. And I know part of it, you know, what's interesting, and I know, gosh, my dad, it's like this has been his baby for 35, maybe 40 years. It was a bit bittersweet for him. But then I think there was a moment when we did the announcement and we had 500 agents show up to this event. It was a moment of, okay, this was right.
He's done 30 acquisitions that you mentioned.
Yes.
So going through that experience, he was involved in the acquisition process. What was being on the other side of the table for him, and you both going through that experience? Well, what's his negotiating style? How long was
the
negotiation?
He's a simple man. And he, you know, we went a little back and forth. I think he maybe had some moments where it was, I'm not sure if I want to do this. But he's old school in that he's a man of his word, and he wants it straight and simple. And if we're going to do it, this is it. I think on the other side, Compass can appreciate that. You know, he's not a nitpicker. He's not trying to come back and tap the well again once more. You know, I think we made a few changes along the way, but that's fine. I think it was interesting. Certainly he was not as deeply involved in a lot of the due diligence, which was interesting for us because I definitely look at the way we bought companies and I'm going, oh my gosh, you know, dealing with a publicly traded company is a whole different ballgame. Sure. But certainly should be reassuring for Compass agents that they certainly do their homework. And I feel like through this process, you know, it almost feels like we've audited the company backwards and forwards, up and down. You know, it was a very extensive process.
And was CEO of Compass involved in that? Was Robert Revkin at the table with you?
He was. We had, and actually Mark McLaughlin, who is their head of strategy, Chrissy Hunt.
Mark's name's come up a lot lately because they obviously had their settlement.
They came to New Orleans, and I think they are very much still into that eyeball-to-eyeball relationship, getting to know us. I think they still want to come in and look at more of our markets. You know, it's kind of hard when we're that spread out to touch everybody and really get the full picture. But he was very involved. They have a great M&A team, I feel like, you know, certainly through this, I know that team and the accounting team very well. So I'm anxious to lean in a little harder and get to know more of the team and more of the agents.
What type of leader is Robert Revkin?
I can tell you, I find he's smart, yet very approachable. I think, you know, even maybe from my standpoint where you hear about him and you see him, he's this big figure. Again, very approachable, very human, but smart. I think he definitely is into empowering his people to make good decisions. I don't find him to be a micromanager. And even in this, you know, the idea of in our conversations, what I really appreciated about sort of his philosophy on, I say brokerage going forward is that, you know, even my questions of, okay, is this going to be a flip the switch and we're all of a sudden, wham, you know, it's drop your stuff and now you're Compass. There's a fluid take to it, as far as the whole point is to bring the best of the best in one place. If we say, hey, we use this and we find that this works in our markets, there's an appreciation for the whole point is just to bring what is best for the agents, what is best for the company in one spot, and let's do it. So I find him very open, very driven. I know Compass is on a very serious path to prove that they are profitable, and I think they will do it.
Yeah, they were on a war path for buying companies for some time.
Yes.
And then you saw a definite pullback. So I think that speaks to how much they value you and your company to go make this acquisition at this time, because they haven't been on that same just path of buying companies and buying teams. And
it's interesting. I think Compass has good momentum right now. I think at a time where, you know, even we're sitting here, we're at this conference, and a lot of interesting points about just this cloud that's over the industry right now, and the fact that Compass is flexing and being very offensive and making moves at a time where it feels like most brokerages are a little bit in neutral. And understandably so. I mean, I think it was a great takeaway from this morning. I mean, have we ever experienced a time where we've essentially had sort of four black swan issues come crashing down on the industry?
Back to back to back.
Back to back to back. You know, and like, you know, Stefan said, I mean, each one could have been something to derail everybody. Yeah. So it's a confusing time. I think everybody knows that we will get through it, but what will that look like? But I commend the Compass team for, you know, even maybe a takeaway from Rich Barton, driving forward, keeping the focus and knowing that we will get through this, and they plan on being a player.
Oh, they clearly, I mean, they are a player.
Yeah,
obviously,
right.
That's there are Compass agents that when there was questions about, you know, the future of Compass in terms of profitability,
yes.
And I think some of those questions have certainly been answered over the last 12 to 18 months, and, you know, they've been very strategic in that way. But there was a lot of agents that were with Compass that said, no matter what, I'm staying at Compass. Like,
yes.
The loyalty that's been built up over a short period of time, I've said this before, the loyalty that the brand Compass, and certainly that's going to, you know, you got to give credit to the leadership on that, has been built in a short period of time. That is, it's a deep loyalty.
It's deep.
That agents
it's
have.
It's deep. I, even in this whirlwind of a month in my interaction with Compass agents and leadership, they take agent-centric to a whole new level. And even, you know, interesting that a lot of the organized get-togethers, we have one coming up on the panhandle of Florida, an area called 30A, which is amazing, are very agent-driven. You know, they are coming up with the content. They like getting together, and agents show up because they know it's important. It just, again, a lot of companies talk about their culture and talk about what they do for the agents, but this is next level.
Could you see yourself as the CEO of Compass one day?
So, I think Robert is the right guy for the job, you know?
Well, he's there right now. One day in the future. Is that something you would have ambitions for now that you're part of the company?
I'm very open to basically wherever I can add value and wherever the company feels that I fit and can bring the most to the table, I'm open to that.
Did they ask you if you saw yourself in that seat one day?
They asked if I certainly wanted to, if I was invested in still being a part of the industry, if I had an appetite to be a leader, you know, what is the appetite there to take on more? And the answer is yes.
And they see that they want you to be part of that leadership team moving forward. Because sometimes people get bought out and then they're like sunset
and
that type of thing.
No, I think they would like, and certainly I look at it like every brokerage, especially a large one, you're always looking for talent at whatever level and sort of people that are committed to helping the team. So I certainly feel like I check those boxes where I feel like I have, you know, great experience in the field, a commitment to making it a better industry. So again, I just sort of remain open because I do recognize that this is all very early and they need to get to know me. I know. And I would like to get to know them more and see where I fit in.
I mean, Robert's a new player on the, generally speaking, when you look at the history of brokerages, I mean, some of these guys, I'll say guys, because it's kind of like a good old boys club to some degree. They've been doing it for a long time. So he's kind of a new member of the club, but what does the club need more of, right? If there's changes in leadership, whether that be, hey, you know, it looks very similar all the time, or just styles of leadership, you know, whatever direction you want to take that. What does the CEO club in real estate need more of?
I would say, you know, it's been interesting that, you know, we just left the room where Rich Barton's talking. In a good way, the industry has had people from outside of the industry come in, where maybe in the past it was all people that were only tunneled in, in the real estate industry. So I think as an industry, we are slow to evolve. Having people from, you know, external other industries are forcing us this external change. So I think we're on the right path as far as being open to, you know, I kind of get funny about when people bring up, you know, do we have to check a box with the diversity? No. Quality people who are invested in making it better, period.
That do the work.
That do the work. And I've been fascinated by, you know, as I learn the Compass team or, you know, go to headquarters, they have some smart people. I mean, they're not, I mean, incredible smart people that, you know, maybe haven't, that have been in the industry for a while. So again, you know, what does it need? Probably still a mix of people that are the practical operators who actually are more Main Street. Like in reality, what is it really like working and running a brokerage and everything else versus that happy medium of Main Street, Wall Street, or tech industry or completely different industry?
Well, people who are doing the work and will, you know, what I'm seeing with leaders right now is the ones that are willing to really get as far down to the ground level or on that ground level as they can and spend a significant portion of time there. There are leaders downstairs in that room that wouldn't even do this to, you know, and sit down with me or sit down with anybody for that matter. They'll get on the stage and give very vanilla answers.
Right.
Don't have a, not that you have to have a social media presence, but when it's like, okay, if you don't give straightforward answers on stage and you say, well, you know, we can't say certain things. Well, Andy Florence is worth more than anybody in that room and he says whatever he wants at any moment that he wants to say it. So maybe, you know, you could take a, people could take a page out of his book. Not willing to put themselves out on social. At some point, the agents are going to say, well, what, I can't see anything that the leader's doing.
Yes.
So what are they doing for me? And that's where you see some agent counts potentially going the opposite direction that they would hope. Going back to, you know, with Robert Revkin, I know for sure, and I've been critical of some of his things, so I'm not trying to highlight all the good just because you're sitting in front of me. But I know for sure he's reached out to agents that aren't high producers. Hey, what's going on with the business? What are you thinking about doing? You know, asking questions while he's in another country, like doing the work.
We and our the agents at Latter & Blum were completely blown away because I think he is sincere in that. We did an announcement video and he was very quick to say, here's my email and here's my cell phone. You know, and it's always interesting what agents choose to say and, oh my God, and I know he's seen it all. But they were shocked where they got a phone call, got an email, he wants to know. We even had agents, and I know maybe we were talking a little bit before. We cover a very diverse kind of sampling of every, you know, price points in different markets. And I think there was a little bit of a fear with some of our agents that said, like, do they want me? You know, do they really want me? And it's like, oh my God. You know, it's like, yes, they do.
Sotheby's used to have that.
Yes, a little bit. Where, and again, I know Latter & Blum has always been, you know, a premium brand, although we cover, you know, just a variety of markets. But I think Robert is, again, very sincere about wanting to know what's happening on the street. You know, what do you need? What are you hearing? How can we help you and your business?
Do you think more, whether it's Compass or another acquirer, more, I mean, you guys have been around 1916. It's unbelievable. You think more of these independents who are the big independents in this country that are doing such a great job are going to make a decision similar to the Latter and Bloom decision?
I do. It's a tough road right now. I mean, I say, and not that it's specific to independent large or medium brokerages. There's just a lot of pressure on every model, every brokerage. But I think in particular, you know, I am so fiercely loyal and defending of, and I'm irritated right now with the NAR settlement and kind of and absolutely throwing the brokers that are $2 billion and above under the bus. I mean, I want to reiterate that. Like, I don't think NAR has felt the real rage of those companies that are livid. I think if we were to put pencil to paper and calculate, what have these companies that are now, you know, they've said, oh, here's your out, but it's a horrible out. And why can you say we're going to draw this line and protect these people and not these, when I would argue that these large brokers have been basically supporting the existence of NAR from the beginning? And what kind of thank you is that?
More agent count equals more dues. So they've benefited from that.
And for the longest. So it's like, gosh, you feel pretty gutted when you're like, man, this company that might go out of business tomorrow, but they open their tent and they're doing business now, are more protected than groups that have supported fiercely NAR through the years. And it's just.
So you believe because of some of these issues.
Yes.
That more independents will say, you know what, it's going to be advantageous for us to get bigger or be with the right partnership,
be
or
with the right
merger
partner.
That has more, you know, more ability to protect, invest, grow.
And it could go either way. And I do feel like, gosh, you know, a lot of these brokerages that have been around for all these years, certainly they've weathered storms. You know, this one just feels different. This one has brought a lot of pain to brokerages that were already under pressure with, you know, brokerages aren't huge margin makers. You know, whether you have ancillary businesses that support that, great. I just think that it's going to force a lot of medium, large brokers to consider, what are my options? You know, what is the best path forward? And not to say they can't survive. You know, boutique-y firms might be going through the same questions. You know, am I better off doing this alone, or, you know, what resources do I need? Basically, what's the best thing for my agents?
Rich Barton, we mentioned him a couple of times just because we literally, I'm not a fanboy, you're not a fangirl of, but respect Zillow Brand, respect Rich, but we just walked out of a room when he was talking. So that was why we keep bringing it up. He said, the change we're experiencing is not that radical. Yet you're talking about some of this change being, you said, you just used the word significant.
Yes.
So do you disagree with Rich that the change isn't, in his vision, not that radical?
I think that there is going to be radical change. Even touching on this utter disappointment that agents, brokers, and I'm not even talking, you know, there's the whole group of the 2 billion plus, but agents are asking themselves, and again, why is it that even throughout all the lawsuit stuff, why is it that we are still essentially hostage to NAR to access the MLS? I mean, that's a big boulder that I feel like has not been addressed in this whole situation. I think
the plaintiffs don't care about that.
They don't.
The tie-in agreement of MLS, local board, NAR, there's a three-way tie-in agreement in a lot of states.
Yes.
Let us know in the comments, obviously, if that's your case.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like we haven't even felt the seismic change shifts that are coming. They might take a little more time, but, you know, for Zillow, who was not named in any of these lawsuits and is kind of, you know, just business as usual heading on, there will be major changes with NAR. There's a lack of trust, a lack of faith in leadership. These are big topics. I think for a long time, even, you know, as Stefan is talking about the danger report, there have been concerns about sort of these old existing structures that we've lived with for so long. And everybody's kind of going, is this working? Like, do we agree with this? Like, do we want this? So I think even MLSs, my gosh, I mean, there's just utter confusion right now as far as, you know, what are we putting in the MLS? What can we show? What can we do? There's going to be big change.
You're not afraid to be a member of a board, you're a member of United Way board. Mm-hmm. And have you been involved in any of the boards over the years as a leader in the industry?
We are, as a company, we are given a seat in the large 75. We always have send representatives, and we do have people within the company. Gosh, we've got a manager in Baton Rouge who's 80 years old, and she's a powerhouse. And she's always been a real, bleeds for NAR, but it's been interesting and kind of sad to see her, just utter loss of what just happened here. You know, this is an institution that we have all believed in, and it's just been a total disappointment. And I understand, and I feel like, Byron, I apologize too, because it's like, okay, you can bitch about something, but it's like, are you willing to help it or what? So I don't want to come across, because I'm venting about, this situation with NAR and, oh my gosh, going forward for brokers and agents. But I do understand that there's an element of, if you're going to complain about it, try to find a solution for it.
Listen, I probably complain more than anybody. I think open discussions are healthy.
Yes.
Number one. And so what I'm trying to have those open discussions can be difficult.
Yes.
Because if the other side wants to, and that's where I was going with some of the leaders not willing to say things. Mm-hmm. If a leader in this industry, whether it be the association or the CEO of any company, isn't willing to engage in open discussion because of fear of, well, I can't say the wrong thing because, my attorney told me not to. You know what you can and can't say. Mm-hmm. And not being willing to have the discussion. Part of the discussion might be, hey, there's 20% of the answers or questions I can't answer.
But it's concerning.
But they're not communicating. That's, right. I think, what is concerning. So then working on the problem can be seen as, complaining or mm-hmm. holding accountable. You can view it that way, but it's a one-sided discussion right now. There's not an open discussion. There's a lot of teleprompter reading that goes on, especially from the association, mm-hmm. as opposed to town hall experience.
I'd say, even on that point, and I know it was brought up even in this conference, the fact that, even on the, say, NAR website, it's very hard to find information. And it is very one-sided. And it's like, oh, no, we got it. Don't look behind the curtain. Everything's cool. And it's like, well, actually, everything's not cool. We have a lot of questions. So I hear you. It's frustrating that you, are seeking answers to things, and there's a resistance and a reluctance to be upfront and honest.
Yeah. I mean, at some point that doesn't work anymore. You had talked about the over 2 billion, under 2 billion mark. And one of the options, the only reason NAR is given for drawing that line is to avoid bankruptcy for the association, while bankruptcy has been an option for other businesses to survive and even come back.
Yes.
Do you believe just the consensus in that brokerage community, not you can speak for yourself or what you think mm-hmm. is a consensus, or take that any direction you want. But do you think a lot of these brokers are saying we would have preferred go through the bankruptcy or preferred to continue to move down the legal path mm-hmm. or option three, I guess, include everybody in a settlement? Where do you think the consensus would be on that?
I just feel like as a trade association that's gotten the reputation and what sort of NAR is supposed to stand for, it just feels like a colossal disappointment for every broker that it wasn't somewhat all-inclusive to say, we're going to protect everybody maybe up to this point.
Yeah.
By drawing that line, it just, feels really disappointing for the ones that were excluded. I think a lot of those brokers, Latter & Blum, we were named in a suit in Louisiana, pretty much as the only broker. We would have taken it there instead of, gone with the group. I certainly don't know probably everything I need to know about the ins and outs of what the brain trust or whoever at NAR was thinking. But it just feels it feels unfair.
What do you think will shake out? What do you think the future of NAR and moving forward will be?
I think we need to address that question that I brought up earlier. You know, even despite all of the lawsuit stuff and everything else, and here we are still obligated to be a member of NAR to access the MLS. That's got to change.
So until that changes, the future is murky and uncertain.
And I think as it remains unanswered, it's fueling a lot of anger towards even more so to NAR.
Interesting. We had a conversation before this. Just totally switching gears here. Unless you got more on NAR.
No, I'd like to stop. That's probably enough. You'd like to stop. I'm getting amped up.
Robert's not texting you right now, right?
No, he probably is.
He has the room bugged.
Yeah,
he can hear
I'm already buzzing the tower. It's early.
Switching gears, one of the arms of the company was, I said to you, it's in Texas, or some of your offices in Texas. I said, are some of those 100% companies? And you kind of looked at me side-eyed and said, what are you talking about?
Oh my gosh.
Use that word.
So, and I'll give a little background to the listeners. Yes, in 2015, we bought a company based in Houston, Texas, and they kind of all over that region called Realty Associates. And it's a transaction fee brokerage. And I get really, it's funny, I guess, in the language and the way people describe, you know, their business model, because it's incredibly simple. You know, the agents pay a fee to join the company every year. And then basically, depending on sort of this bracket of sales price, you pay, you know, $250 to the company, $300, $350. Okay, if it's a commercial deal, it might be something different. But it's a transaction fee to the brokerage. Even though the agents are taking the lion's share of the commission, it's not, people say 100% when you're
Nothing's
like, 100%. It's not 100%. It's like, well, let's be clear about what this is, because when a lot of brokerages say they're 100%, they're really not. You know, you got a monthly fee, you've got this, and you're paying the company something. Maybe at some point you tap out and then you're at 100, but no, that company, pure transaction fee, very simple. So much company dollar, a new cap, it's not, there's no stock, there's no whatever. It is incredibly simple, and it's a great company.
I'm glad you said that. I bring this up kind of off the heels of that NAR discussion. There's probably a right or wrong, you know, you tell me how you feel, probably a perception from agents that 100% transaction fee agents maybe aren't as committed to the career as other agents.
There's
a stigma to it.
They're like lesser than.
Right. And so based on your experience of having really under Latter & Blum, two models.
Yes.
What's the big difference between, or is there a difference between great transaction fee agents and agents on a common split?
We are able to track, you know, even sort of like transactions per agent, you know, productivity, where we recruit from. And quite honestly, you know, that we still grab agents from at Realty Associates from, you know, a Coldwell Banker or companies where you would think traditionally, oh, they know more because they have more support. And Houston is an interesting market. And I know Bob Hale is here.
I think you're sitting front row.
Yes. That company has had the unique advantage of HAR, which is so prolific with tools and training. And oh my God. So that company has taken full advantage of everything the association offers. It's, you know, kind of blows my mind. Sometimes I think about other companies in that market that are supplementing the tools. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the tool list and the training and everything that HAR does, but it's an association on steroids.
Yeah.
I mean,
we had somebody from Houston Association on one of our pods a while back. They reached out when we covered, I think we were covering the primary versus the master. I can't remember. Haley, you weren't even here yet, so you wouldn't remember. But then I started doing research on that particular association. They do more than, or that particular, they do more
yes.
than.
Yes. Than, and so I get to talk out of both sides of my mouth, because at Latter & Blum, as the traditional broker, I get irritated by MLS's trying to up my tools all the time, you know, because we pay for the best. And then, oh my God, why did you get that? This, because we have it. But yet with Realty Associates, we've had the taken advantage of that and said, okay, we're going to go with it. So we have certainly experienced both worlds. But yes, there is a bit of a stigma with transaction fee brokerages, like they're lesser than, and oh my God, you know, we're going to poo-poo that. No, we have found that they are, you know, at times just as productive. I think the expectations are just vastly different. You know, what we provide as far as support, training, and the services is so much different than it is in Texas.
Is it less training?
Less draining?
Training.
Training. Yes, although, again, with title companies, HAR, education is very readily accessible. So it makes it so that we don't have to supplement as much, although we do believe in broker support, and we have three, you know, employees that are broker support.
Where do you see agents moving forward, like their commitment to training? Is it the great agents are always training and that's just the way it always is, or are all agents going to have to do more training? Like the commitment to be having a career in real estate, how do you look at that?
I've always found that, you know, especially irregardless of what's kind of this dark cloud, black swan events that are ascending on us right now, the best agents are the ones that are always learning. Every deal is different. I know even for our markets, very specifically, the things that agents need to know and be really sharp on, you know, changes with insurance. These are big things that really make major fluctuations for your client, knowing and staying on top of things. So I think education, even more so now, is important with, you know, changes at NAR, staying on top of how to be a real professional in this industry. You know, it's great that you can get training from many sources, and not all are created equal, but it is nice that I know for us, both companies, every market, we do take advantage of, you know, always having some sort of professional top person and something relevant for the agents to hear at every sales meeting, which for Louisiana, Mississippi, we do a sales meeting every Wednesday, Tuesday or Wednesday. So it's a constant. And then kind of breakout, the manager can pick up on themes. Gosh, do we, you know, are the agents having multiple offer situations? Like what are we seeing? Or are agents needing a tune up with the way that they're, you know, language in the contract? So I think even more so right now with the pressures of communicating to buyers and sellers your value, education will be more important.
I agree. It's how you're going to be an agent of change. We're talking a lot about that at BAM. Lacey, my hope is that you continue to lead in the industry. We need great leadership. You're certainly that. You're very authentic. You're willing to engage in open discussion. And so what do you want to leave us with here as we move forward through a lot of change?
Oh my goodness. And thank you for all that, because really it's been a treat. I know Brian and Mark are like my other favorite people.
Mark Davis and Brian, yes, from 1000 Watt. Oh yeah, they God. Put us together.
They
so that's,
did.
That is a great
they
shout
did.
Out. Thank you for saying that.
But we had a miss because like, oh, come to the event. Oh my gosh. And then we missed, but now here we are. So yeah. This is lucky for me. And you know, I will continue to follow what you have to say and happy to contribute in any way going forward.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to your continued leadership in the industry. Lacey, we'll link all your stuff, but thank you so much and congratulations, yes, on the new chapter. And
yes, exciting new chapter. Thank you.
Thank you.
At BAMX, we listen to what real estate professionals want and need. That's why our platform is filled with sought-after courses, content, and tactical assets for your business. And that's why we launched BAMX in a box with templates and scripts done for you, delivered each Friday. The best part? It's not coming from panel pontificators who bought their followers and don't sell any real estate. It's coming from top agents, team leaders, and content creators in the industry. It's education that actually shows you how to do what you need in today's market. And now it includes editable templates and scripts so you can easily deliver that knowledge to your database. Every day, we continue to add more content into BAMX, into our private Facebook community, content that works, content that our members have exclusive access to daily. Do not wait any longer. Use code BYRON and join the thousands of agents taking their business to the next level today. Code BYRON for 10% off. I'll see you in BAMX.